This is our number two.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes of the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
Oh, it's a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. We do it all for you. Glad you're listening. Thanks for being part of our Fastest 15. By the way, coming up, as Heather just mentioned, at 1:30 this afternoon, James Donaldson, who is a former Coug, a 16-year NBA vet who played for the Sonics, James Donaldson is running for mayor of Seattle. Wonder if he'd be the tallest mayor ever in America. I need to research that. James Donaldson is 7 feet 2 inches tall. And so, but he's a good man. I've known James for a long time. And I also know that he's had some real battles in life, including with mental illness. And he talks very openly about it. In fact, I'll talk to him about it coming up at the bottom of the hour. But I'm also thinking, if he's figured out a way to battle through all of this, maybe that's the right person that we need in charge of the city. Because so many of our problems have to do with the mentally ill or the drug addicted on our streets. That's your crime problem. That's your homelessness problem. So I'm be interested to talk to James Donaldson coming up at 1:30 this afternoon and see what his solutions would be. Here, let me just Google, who is the tallest mayor in U.S.? Let's see what it gives us. It looks like Mayor Brad Sellers is the tallest politician. He's 7 feet tall. So see, there you go. We could beat a record. We could be number one with a 7-foot-2-inch mayor. Okay. That's the kind of fascinating, probing politics you get on The Big Show. Nicole, I need to play one more of these Chris Harrison cuts. Did you see the whole Good Morning America interview?
I did. I watched it.
Michael Strahan, The Bachelor is like the ABC primetime cash cow. Good Morning America is the early day cash cow for ABC. I was surprised to hear Michael Strahan took shots at him.
He was not impressed. Not impressed by the interview either. Afterwards, he was not impressed.
Yeah, after the interview, he was saying, yeah, that sounds like a guy who just wants to get his job back instead of being sorry. And again, what Chris Harrison did was he said we should extend grace to this contestant, this girl who went to an antebellum party in 2018. And he said, you know, maybe we're more aware that that was wrong now than in 2018. And everybody's hammering him for what he said.
I am saddened and shocked at how insensitive I was in that interview with Rachel Lindsay. And I didn't speak from my heart. And that is to say, I stand against all forms of racism, and I am deeply sorry. I'm sorry to Rachel Lindsay, and I'm sorry to the black community.
So he really wants his job back. He gets paid $9 million a year.
Well, I wonder if he wants his job back or if the job, like they have pretty much given him the job back from what I'm hearing. Their ratings have tanked. Like, just tanked. And so they want him back. So they're trying to figure out a way to bring him back. And so now he's trying to get the audience to allow him back, I guess, or try to make up for it. And apparently, I mean, he obviously sounds like he's in some sort of training now. And he said that within it. He's in a training, meeting with some kind of therapist, whatever, teacher. And he's, you know, He talks like it. He talks like how that person's probably talking to him and teaching him. So I don't know.
Stop talking. He should stop
terrible.
Talking. That's my advice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because this blows. These things blow over. You don't understand that when this happens to you, and I've counseled high school kids on this. We had a high school girl a couple years ago, and she didn't come on the show, but something had happened that put her in the crosshairs of all these, you know, vile people on social media. And I got hold of her and I said, I know this is hard to imagine, but in a week, nobody's going to remember this. But when you're, you know, if you're a 15-year-old girl, you think that's the end of your life. And that's what is so poisonous and so filled with bile. Because these kids, and then a lot of times these kids in the midst of a tornado, they'll take their own life thinking that it's going to be like this for the rest of my life. No, it's going to be like that for probably 48 hours, and then the mob's going to move on to somebody else because they don't reflect anything about you. They reflect only just the awfulness inside of themselves.
Well, I also think that, I mean, given the ratings that they have tanking, it's not the majority. The majority of people are understanding, and they understand whether, you know, what he meant or what he intended. They know that he didn't intend for it to be this hurtful comment. Everybody, I mean, I think the majority understands that he's learned from his mistake, I guess, and is, you know, everybody's level-headed about it. I think that it's just, like you said, like you referred to the mob, and the mob is small, but they're loud. And I think that the ratings kind of show that. The ratings have tanked because the majority of people think it's ridiculous what's happening to them.
ABC should have done nothing and everything would be okay. It'd be forgotten, completely forgotten by now. Trust me, I know what I'm talking about here. Remember during the last presidential campaign in 16 when Hillary Clinton, this might have been a fatal blow to her presidency.
You could put half of Trump's supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables.
Ooh, she called 35 million Americans deplorable. Well, Governor Abbott down in Texas, he announced yesterday, we played you the audio, that he's ending the mask ban and he's opening up all businesses at 100%. Now, Joe Biden, he's going to be the person who brings us all together. Okay, that's what he told us throughout the campaign on the rare occasions that he spoke. He said that he was going to be a uniter. Joe? Balls in your court.
I hope everybody's realized by now these masks make a difference. The last thing we need is the Neanderthal thinking that in the meantime, everything's fine. Take off your mask. Forget it. It still matters.
You're a Neanderthal. Wow. If you're down in Texas and you're going out to a restaurant tonight without a mask, you're a Neanderthal. Coming from somebody whose brain isn't functioning at 100%. I think we can all agree on that. It's odd to hear Joe at whatever percentage he's at calling other people Neanderthals. Governor Abbott in Texas responds.
Not the type of thing that a president should be saying. But second, he kind of said it on the worst day he could have. Because the same day he said that, in Texas, the Biden administration was releasing illegal immigrants into our communities who had COVID. The Biden administration was spreading COVID in South Texas yesterday because of their lack of constraint of testing and quarantining people who'd come across the border illegally. The Biden administration was exposing Texans to COVID. That is Neanderthal-type approach to dealing with the COVID situation.
That is the story. So Joe Biden says they're Neanderthals because they want to get the businesses back up and running. But what Governor Abbott just said is 100% accurate, that we have a crisis at the border. We have thousands of illegals heading to the United States. Hundreds are crossing the border. They aren't getting tested for COVID. And then we find out after they've already come into the country illegally that yesterday 108 were already tested positive for COVID, but some were on buses. One woman was on a bus on her way to North Carolina with her kid. She came up from Guatemala, I believe, and she said, yeah, I'm not getting off this bus, even though she had been tested positive for COVID. Now, in what sane world would a president let COVID-infected people, when they're telling us that they're trying to get their hands around this public health crisis, and that our president is letting hundreds of COVID-infected illegals, not only are they COVID-infected, but they don't legally belong in this country. And our president is letting hundreds of COVID-infected illegals come into the United States without any health checks at all. And he's calling other people Neanderthals? This absolute groveling for the votes. They think that, you know, if they bring in enough illegals, they'll find a pathway to citizenship, and then they'll be permanent Democratic voters, and they'll never, ever, ever be out of office again. I mean, that's the hope here. But it is such a backwards policy. And again, I don't know if Joe Biden's in partial control of the government. I don't know if he's not in control at all. But I do know that letting COVID-infected illegals into the country is a horrible policy. All right. Without any further ado, I also have for you here, if Sean is ready, I have a cancel culture update.
This is your cancel culture update.
And this will be a cancel double shot for you. Let's start in our nation's capital, where the football team is cleverly called the football team. And the Washington football team has announced that it is getting even more woke. No more cheerleaders next season. They say that as the left-wing wave has crashed upon America's institutions, it's time to become even more woke. So the ownership that refused to relinquish the name Redskins until a year ago, they are now going full bore in the woke direction. They've announced that they will not have cheerleaders this coming season after more than 50 years with cheerleaders on the sideline. In their place will be a co-ed dance squad. The director of the dance squad said that they want to be more inclusive. Being super athletic is the new goal, she told USA Today. We're able to do more things with the strength of a male and lifts, so that's changed a great deal. The inclusivity, strength, and interest of choreography has changed. And so, Washington football team cheerleaders, you have been
canceled. Let's get fired up.
Then also there's this, if you've got it's especially prevalent at NBA games. I think there are some Major League Baseball teams that do this. Back in the olden days when they used to have fans in the stands, they would have a kiss cam, and they would find a couple sitting in the stands, and then they would be goaded by the crowd, do it, come on, do it, into kissing each other. And it was always kind of cute and sweet and mildly amusing. Well, the Milwaukee Bucks have swapped out the kiss cam for the hand sanitizer cam to welcome fans back into the arena after COVID lockdowns. The hand sanitizer cam is a little odd, but what they do is they put a picture of fan in the seats on the stand, and then they have superimposed in the picture a jar of hand sanitizer, and you're supposed to put your hands out, and an animated squirt will come your way. It doesn't sound nearly as fun as the Kiss Cam. Because Kiss Cam, you have been
canceled.
This has been a cancel culture update. Now back to your regularly scheduled program.
Oh, there it is. I thought you were going to do that right after the canceled.
Play the Kiss?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I switched
it
up.
I've come to enjoy your embellishments very much.
Thanks. I'm having fun with the gig, you know?
By the way, Dory, you know, with the cheerleader thing, that woman that you quoted, she's mentioned that men might be physiologically different than women. That wasn't very nice of her.
Oh, she should be canceled for that. No. There's absolutely no difference between men and women whatsoever. And anybody who says that should be canceled. Crying out loud. We're identical. We're identical. That's all I'm going to say about that. Let's see. What is it? I've done. Should I do this? Should I save it? I'll save it. I'll save the other good stuff that I have because I'm looking forward to an upcoming interview. That there is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
Give us 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. Coming up next, former Seattle Supersonic. Also a guy who has had some real battles and travails in life. And I admire people who fight through some of the things that life throws at all of us. He wants to be the next mayor of Seattle. James Donaldson joins me next, and we'll see if he could be the next person in charge. That's coming up on the Dory Monson Show. As you know, Jenny Durkin is not going to run again for Seattle mayor, so some candidates are starting to throw their hat in the ring, and one of them is a former Coug, a former Seattle Supersonic, played in the NBA for 16 seasons. James Donaldson joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. James, it's good to talk to you again.
Dory, it is so great to talk to you. I reached out to you a couple of times this summer during our Summer of Love, and wasn't quite able to get on your show then, but I've been working on this since then.
Well, and I've always had a fond place in my heart for you, and I maybe have told you this before, but when I was an 18-year-old kid covering the Sonics for an Everett radio station, that was your rookie year, 1980, mm-hmm. right?
80? That's right, 1980,
yeah.
Yes.
Yes, that was your rookie year. And James, you were my go-to guy. You didn't know me from Adam. I'm sure you don't remember anything of those days. No. But you were my go-to guy because you treated an 18-year-old kid who's obviously very green the same way that you treated the very professionally seasoned beat guys, and I always appreciated that about you.
Well, thank you very much. Well, that's just my nature. You know, I do respect everyone. You're trying to do your job. I want to make your job easy as possible and contribute what I can. So, yeah, whether you're a young 18-year-old Dory Monson or a established vet like Wayne Cody. Remember Wayne back then?
Yes, I do. Everybody right. remembers Wayne. Yeah. Well, I want to talk about what you want to do as mayor of Seattle, but I know that there's another issue that you're passionate about, and it seems to me your life experience might really help you as mayor of Seattle, but you've been very open over the years, James, about battling with mental health issues, and I know that that's a cause and an issue that you don't want in the shadows, and it's something you want out there. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I don't want to, you know, suffer in silence, and I want to use my platform I have as a former professional athlete, a community leader, long business owner here in Seattle, as a platform to speak out, and especially as a man of color, African-American man, where in our communities of color, mental health issues are so taboo and so stigmatized, we don't dare talk about it. I want to dare talk about it and let people know that, hey, this happened to me, It can happen to anybody at any time in your life. You just don't know. And that's why I was being so open about this over the last 3 or 4 years, especially. I just published a book about it in January, and it's out and doing very well, helping people with what they're going through. And that's really something I'm very, very passionate about. I set up a nonprofit foundation that gives me a platform to speak from and for people to contact me and share their stories, and I can refer them off to other resources that really can actually help them. So mental health is one of those things that affects everybody.
Yeah.
Experts say 2 out of 5 of us are going to suffer some serious mental health challenge sometime in our life.
Well, and I'll tell you something else. Right now, we just got updated stats on what is happening to our children as they sit at home. And I talked to a girl yesterday who had a 13-year-old girl on my show who had contemplated taking her own life because she had just moved to a new school. She had no friends in this new city, and she was hoping to go to school and make friends, and she just sits in her room all day, every day, and things were getting darker and darker for her. And it's heartbreaking to hear these stories with our kids. How bad did things get for you, James?
It took me right to the verge of wanting to take my life, to the point where I actually had planned it. I had 3 different methods I was going to execute whenever I was ready. And that impulsive voice was coming over me and telling me, hey, James, you got your plan laid out. Just go ahead and do it. Get it over with. And that was the scariest part that I've ever been through in my life. I don't want anybody to get to that point. A lot of people have attempted suicide. I didn't attempt it. I had it all laid out, and my doctor diagnosed me with anxiety, depression, and suicidal ideations, all 3 of those. And that was the first step to recovery, reaching out to a medical professional who can put me on prescription medication, prescribe behavioral health counseling. And I pulled together myself a small, intimate group around me, which included 2 of our favorite guys, Coach Lenny Wilkins and Coach George Raveling. Those 2 guys were like crutches on either side of me and helped me through this thing.
I remember, I think you told me a few years ago that some of those medical professionals, they made sure you didn't have a gun in the house, you didn't have pills in the house, but you said you were walking through your garage, you saw a rope, and you saw some rafters, and that's what went through your mind, right?
That was my most frequent vision of how I was going to end my life. And my doctor said, hey, get rid of that rope right away. I took it down, I gave it to a dear trusted friend of mine. I had a long coil of tubing up there, also a rubber tubing, about 3 or 4 inches diameter, which I was going to connect to my exhaust in my car and snake it through the window and sit in there. I took that down and gave it to my friend as well. You have to get rid of those things, because when you're in that impulsive mindset, this little voice is just telling you, you have to get rid of all of those things that can possibly harm you or somebody else.
So now you're on the road, and I know it's a journey when you're recovering from those mental health challenges. You ran for mayor of Seattle in 2009. You finished 4th out of 8. Now you're running again. The city's gotten much crazier since 2009, James, and there's a lot of challenges. One of the challenges is all the mentally ill people on the streets and all the drug addiction and all of that. I mean, so it strikes me, because I know how intelligent you are, that if you take your life experience with your innate intelligence, maybe you could find a pathway for one of the worst problems plaguing our city.
I really think so. You know what? When I ran in 2009, you know, I had a nice little resume. I was a former professional athlete, long time Seattle person, business person. And that was about it, you know, clean cut, you know, straight guy and doing all the right things. Now I come back at you after going through 4 major surgical procedures in 5 years, 3 of them on my heart, 1 of them on my right lung, bankruptcy, foreclosure, near eviction, financial ruin. I spent all my life savings of NBA savings into my business, my Donaldson Clinic, to try to keep it going as long as I possibly could. Finally had to pull the plug on that in February 2018 during the very darkest time of my depression I was going through. And so I have life experiences now that resonate with everybody out there that's going through a very difficult time right now, whether you're facing foreclosure and eviction, whether you've had medical emergencies, whether you have financial ruin. I know what that's all about. I've been through that. I worked my way through that. And I want to reassure everybody out there, I'm totally back to my old self again, stable as a rock, solid as a rock, and feeling great and much better off for going through those things.
So you've made this incredible battle to get back to where you are now. Why do you want this job? Because, man, James, it's going to be a nightmare for whoever's mayor to have to deal with this city council. What are you doing here, James?
Well, you know, as in 2009, I couldn't sit idly by and watch our incumbent mayor, Greg Nickels, just kind of waltz into another term uncontested. I can't sit idly by and watch this city council and our incumbent mayor continue to take Seattle down this pathway, this degradation of, you know, getting worse and worse and worse. I can't sit by. I don't want a extreme right-hand person or extreme left-wing person jumping into this race, winning the race, and taking us in a different direction than we want to be. I'm straight down the middle. I work with both sides, both aisles. I work with everybody. I've been a 28-year business owner. I'm reading articles in the paper every day about our small business owners suffering. I know the suffering they're going through. I'm going to make sure this city steps up and uses all of its powers to keep our small businesses in business. Yeah. I know it's a thankless job. I know that. I know even if 51% of the people vote for me, 49% are going to hate me. I know that. But, hey, I've lived my life in this public sphere for 40 years. I'm used to the bar. Yes, I'm used to it.
Unlike a lot of politicians, I don't think the people who don't vote for you are going to hate you. You're a really tough guy to hate, James. I know that.
Let's say they probably won't agree with me.
They won't agree with you. Yeah.
I'm the kind of guy, I address everyone's concerns. I listen to everyone. Everyone has a seat at the table and can have an audience with me. I want to listen. The problem with our past administration, our current administration, that's our incumbent mayor, is she didn't listen to everyone. Yeah, she listened to a small minority vocal voice and didn't go back and talk to the large non-vocal majority voice.
I got you. Okay. Hey, so last thing.
She didn't talk to them.
We're about out of time here. This is the question I ask all candidates who come on my show when they want to become mayor or governor or whatever. And then I check to see if they honor their word. Would you always pick up the phone if I call you, no matter how dicey the issue is, and confront it straight on with me?
You've got my word, Dory. I mean, that's the kind of guy I am. And our general public, a lot of folks have my phone number. They call me. I pick it up. I don't let it go in the voicemail. I say, hey, let's have a conversation. Let's meet at a coffee shop. I will always hold that with you.
Okay, I appreciate it. I'm very intrigued by your candidacy, James, and I'll look forward. Let's talk more as this thing moves forward, okay?
Thank you so much, and all the best to everyone. Battle back better than ever.
And by the way, I was reviewing your career last night. Of all the thousands and thousands and thousands of people who have played in the NBA, you are still in the top 20 for field goal percentage. That's incredible.
Yes. You know, I was an effective player. I stuck to what I did well. I didn't try to do things I couldn't do. No dribbling between the legs, no crossover dribbles, no three-pointers. You know?
Yeah, that's right.
And I'm proud of that because that's the way it should be. We should know our strengths. We should recognize our weaknesses, work on those things to get better. And practice doesn't make perfect, but it makes awfully darn good.
As Dirty Harry said, a man's got to know his limitations.
That's right.
Just don't bite off too much. Hey, James, great talk to you. We'll stay in touch, okay?
All right. Thanks, Troy. Have a blessed day. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. You too. Thank you. James Donaldson, former Sonic, former Washington State Cougar, had a 16-year All-Star, one-year NBA career, and he's running for mayor. What do you think? Text me, 98973. That's 98973. Lots more to come here on the Dory Monson Show. Yeah.
is my favorite sport. Uh-huh. I like the way they dribble up and down the court.
I vote no on pretty much every single tax increase that ever appears on the ballot, whether it's for libraries or public transit or Medic One. I'm almost always an automatic no vote because government has plenty of money. Washington State has more money, even in these COVID times, than they had in the last budget. They have, you know, billions more to spend. But it's not enough. They have a massive number of tax increases, bills in Olympia right now, and I am just an absolute no vote on every single one of them. And you know, people say, well, do you hate Medic One? Do you hate libraries? No. But they have plenty of money. And if those things are so important, they should fund them out of the tens of billions we already give them. They should fund those things first, and then they can do all their frivolous nonsense at the end. Instead, they fund the frivolous nonsense and make us raise our own taxes for the essentials. It should be the other way around. And bring this up because at the national level, I'm just amazed at how politicians think that they deserve somebody else's money. So Pramila Jayapal, I don't know her well. She's been on the show a couple of times. I've always assumed that she's probably a little bit bright to get to where she's gotten. But man, she was on CNBC and the host was asking her about her proposed wealth tax. She wants to tax millionaires, if you have over 50 million, 2% of your net worth, and billionaires 3%. So for somebody like Jeff Bezos, I know he has an obscene amount of money, but that means you would tax him $6 billion every single year. After 10 years, you would take $60 billion from one person. But listen to the CNBC host trying to explain that to Pramila Jayapal, and it's like she had no clue what he was even saying.
She's a co-sponsor of the bill along with Senator Warren, serves as the Democratic Caucus Senior Whip. Tom Farley is still with us, and I know he's got questions as well. Congresswoman, the question that I would have is, you know, 2% on an annual basis sounds tiny, but over the period of 20 years, or rather 10 years even, we're talking about 20% of wealth, in some cases 30% of wealth, and there is a question about whether that unto itself is confiscatory.
You know, I just don't see how you could say the 2 cents on every dollar over 50 million is confiscatory. You've still got 98 cents left on every dollar over a million. You've got 97 cents left on every dollar over a billion. So,
his point was, but over 10 years, if you take 3% of somebody's wealth over 10 years, then you've taken 30% of their wealth. She just doesn't get it, though. And it's really disturbing to hear how she cannot even seem to comprehend.
What we're talking about is the very, very top number of families, 100,000 families, where wealth has been concentrated. And because in this country, we have taxed income, we tax property, as you know, to some extent, but property for working families is a much, much bigger share of their total net worth than it is.
Okay, but what she ignores is they've already taxed all the things that are part of the net worth. They've taxed the homes. They've taxed the land. They've taxed the stocks. It's crazy. Man, we've got some financially illiterate people in D.C. Okay, we're going to check the news, then Big Lead 2 next.